we won't be doing next week. Because Fancy Ben is taking his fancy vacations. Where are you going? Texas again?
Yeah, Texas. Who doesn't want to go to Texas in August? I keep opening up my weather app daily to see if the forecast changes. Like, oh, maybe they're finally out of their incredible drought and surface of the sun type temperatures. And no, every day. Like, I keep going 14-day forecast, expecting one day to not be this, but every day is chance of rain, 0%, no clouds, high of 42. 42, man. High of 42. Yeah. It's a dry heat,
did
though.
Did you ever...
Be fine.
So... Yeah. No, you'll be fine. Did you... You saw the story out of Arizona this year, right? How in Phoenix, they basically had to hire... They have a whole department of people that are, like, worried about heat. Because it's just so hot there. They've got a whole department that goes, you know what? What we're worried about is trying to find shade in different places in the city. Because it's too hot. It's unlivable here.
Yeah, it's not dissimilar in Texas. And so I'm going there partly because my wife is from there. She's got a lot of family in Texas and in Austin. Where
you guys ever... Why don't you ever tell that family, though, hey, we come here a lot. Why don't we ever do, like, a family trip just outside of Texas? Like, y'all get in the RVs and y'all just take the whole highway north and meet us in a different state.
I love Texas. I really do. Like, the food is unbelievable, and Austin's a cool place. I've never been there when it's been this hot. But they keep sending us updates about, hey... We're like, hey, we're going to go on the lake, right? You're going to take us out to the lake. They're like, well, the lake is at, like, its
the
lowest level
The lake ain't there
ever.
No more.
used to be really cool, but, like, the thing about the lake is, like, there's no water in the lake. And then, you know, yesterday we got an update. They're like, hey, good news. They put out the fire that was at the dump because all the garbage was on fire because of the extreme heat. So that's good. Like, you won't smell the burning garbage anymore. So that's exciting for us.
This is like not the way I expected to start today, but I'll get off this. But I did also just learn that extreme heat is the type of weather that kills more people than anything. It's not cold. It's not hurricanes.
Sure.
It's not floods. Yeah. Like, it's extreme heat. It's
well,
kills
yeah,
more
I'm
people
sure
than any type of extreme weather.
Yeah, and there's I think part of that, not to get too into the weeds, would be that there's an abundance of that as opposed to extreme cold. Like, people don't live... I think people live in climates where there's the chance of extreme heat than there is in the extreme cold, and that, there's just way more hotter days than there are, like, hurricanes, for sure. So that absolutely tracks. Hopefully I survive, though.
Yeah, I hope you survive, too. Although I do hope it smells like burning dump.
No, they put it out. They put the fire out. Yeah, what are you talking about? We're fine.
Yeah, but you know when you blow out a candle, that's when it stinks the most. So I'm thinking that it applies the same to dumps.
Just like a little bit of rain, like one day of rain. They can't get like some rain.
You ain't getting it.
Nothing.
You ain't getting it, partner. You go to Texas, you just getting dump fires and no lake. All right, let's get this baseball stuff going. So you and I have been actually texting a lot about a couple of different topics, and we're about to have a phone call about one of them, and then I pleaded with you to shut up and said we need to do this on the show rather than do this in private. You kind of powered through my request and started sort of giving your half take. But yeah, let's hit a couple of these things. Number one, though, I want to start with this. And like, okay, Gausman is clearly the number one starter, even with last night happening, right? Like, it would take an injury or... basically a month of this, like what he showed last night, for you to be taken off of Gausman is the number one starter for the Blue Jays come playoff.
I don't know what it would be. Like, and even go back to the start that he had in game 2 against the Mariners last year, which was coming off of a blister situation, right? That's why he didn't start game 1, although Manoah maybe was deserving of starting that game either way. But yeah, he was spectacular until they just handed it all away. He was great, 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 and probably should have gone a little bit deeper than he in fact did. No, Kevin Gausman is starting game 1 of the postseason. There's just no question about it.
Right. So yesterday I said, if you still think Berríos is the number 2 starter, you're not paying attention. Like, and this is why, is that over his last 6 starts, he's pitched 35 innings. His ERA is 1.29. He's got 36 Ks,
Kikuchi
a whip of
does.
1, and a 1. Yes, this is Kikuchi, and a war of 1.4. And Berríos, 6 starts, 32 and a third innings pitched, 3.62 ERA, which again, I don't want to make this seem like Kikuchi or Barrios is a bum. These are really good numbers. It's just in contrast, it shouldn't be a comparison. 31 Ks, 1.5 whip, which is actually a little bit, I would say, not the best. And then a 0.5 war. He's been very good, but to me, if the two guys track even similarly to what they're doing so far, like Kikuchi's clearly the number two. Do you agree with that premise?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think even beyond that, well, I mean, there's so many great numbers for Kikuchi second half of the season. He's now tied the Blue Jays franchise record, 6 consecutive starts, giving up 1 or 0 earned runs, which is ridiculous. Yep. But for me, when you get into the postseason, you want that swing and miss stuff. And just a higher K per nine, you're not looking to get 7 innings out of either guy. Even Kevin Gausman, with the way this bullpen is constructed, like I was positing yesterday, like Jordan Hicks has gone, there's been 8 outings that Jordan Hicks has had this season where he's gone more than an inning. Like he's thrown upwards of like 35 pitches. The idea of getting more than 3 outs out of him and maybe even more than 3 outs out of Jordan Romano and maybe like combined between the two, you get 3 innings of relief, and then you're looking at, you know, Eric Swanson and what, like the 6th, like you really are going to shorten the game. That's going to be the strength of this Blue Jays team. So yeah, get Yusei Kikuchi through 5 5 2/3, striking out everybody, throwing 80 pitches. That's ideal in the postseason.
Dude, it's wild that the bullpen has been such a massive storyline in terms of didn't do enough. And if Chad Green really works out and old T-Rich comes back, all of a sudden you're looking at a bullpen where it's almost going to be tougher for John Schneider in some instances. I was thinking about this last night where you're going, if it ever backfires on you, right? If any of those relievers ever have a bad outing, there's going to be 2 other guys you could have gone to in that spot. Right. And the fans are going to go, why would you have done that one, John? You should have done this one. And he's in an enviable position that you'd love to have more arms than not, but you'd almost wish if you were him that it was a little bit more streamlined in that you had 4 clear guys, you know, just 4 clear guys, and those were the 4 guys. Like, I was looking at the roster of who they're going to have to dump out here, and it'll probably be pretty straightforward, right? They're going to bring up 4 guys, and the 4 guys that go are pretty obvious, right? And, yeah, it's Jay Jackson is the bubble guy. But he's solid. Like, Jay Jackson ain't hurting anybody.
No, it's like
Bowden. I can't Francis. Abandon the Texas stuff now.
Yeah, it is great.
He ain't hurting nobody.
Yeah, I mean, it's also great to, like, go to a place where you can wear a cowboy hat and not feel like a freak, like you fit in wearing a cowboy hat.
You have a huge head, though. You're built for a cowboy hat.
Of course,
you have a massive head.
Of course, buddy. Yeah, I can't wait. No, it's a joke, really, that, like, Nate Pearson isn't with this team, and I know he's had an up-and-down season, but his last outing was great. Yeah. It's like, sorry, man, got no room for you.
Not even close.
Like, you're just like an optional reliever now. Bowden Francis, like, you could be part of our starting depth next year. Like, you've kind of established yourself as major league caliber. Sorry, back down you go. Same with Jay Jackson, same deal. I mean, rosters do expand to 28, but you can only have 14 pitchers. So in September, they'll be allowed to carry an extra reliever. But to your point about John Schneider having, like, almost too many possibilities, too many options, I don't disagree with that. And I know you physically can't, you know, lift a reliever if they look bad right out of the chute because they have to face 3 batters minimum. But I do wonder, like, how quickly will he go to the next reliever up if he sees a guy that doesn't look like he has it in that moment on that day?
Have to be immediate. Dude, think about it. They're going to have Romano, Hicks, Swanson. That's the back. That's the 3 guys that you kind of feel are immovable outside of the fact that it could be Meza, right, as the 4th guy because he's the loogie.
Matchup. Mm-hmm.
So you've got those 4 guys, and then you've got Trevor Richards, who you could have argued for long stretches of the season was the team's basically most effective reliever outside of Romano.
Yeah, and you want to talk about multiple innings as well. Like, that guy is got a rubber arm, seemingly.
100%. And then it kind of feels
Jimmy Garcia's pitched in leverage a bunch too, second half.
Although I will say that one of my favorite things about this bullpen is that Jimmy is removed from leverage.
Yeah.
Because I love Jimmy.
Not incapable,
not incapable, but just don't love it. Don't love seeing Jimmy come out of the pen for leverage. It just always feels like there's at least one runner on, and it always feels like a bit of a sweat. And then there's Chad Green. That's like seven guys. That's seven guys that you could conceivably put in leverage, who have history in leverage. It's it's an incredible amount of depth at that position, like truly. And there's swing and miss stuff. There's different kind of arms. There's a guy who throws 104. It just the variance in which they have out of that bullpen is going to be nuts. So yeah, I agree with you about the you've kind of got to have the quick trigger. But I think it's even going to be more interesting whether or not they can kind of solidify up some of those jobs or who those dudes are going to be that end up being the two guys. Let's say the two go-to guys outside of the three or the four that I just mentioned.
Well, yeah. I mean, in the perfect world, you most need three in a postseason start. And in an ideal world, you're also dealing with the lead like that. The pitching is all great. I got to score a run. But yeah,
that's true.
I think
that's true. That's true. Yeah. And you know what they don't do so good is that one.
Yeah.
You know, Jobo, I know it's hilarious, but it's just like they're still third last in OPS with runners in scoring position this season. That the only teams that are better than are Kansas City and Oakland.
Yeah, runners in scoring position is mind-boggling. You got to read the – so I tweeted out a FanGraph story yesterday about, like, a super nerd who, like, dove into the numbers, like, over the years about runners in scoring position. And the thing I've been harping about all season long, scoring runners from third base with fewer than two outs, which is essentially the entire difference between what the Blue Jays have done this season and what the Baltimore Orioles have done this season. And, I mean, also the difference is those head-to-head meetings, because they have almost identical records outside of their head-to-head meetings with each other. But it's like 20-plus runs scored is the difference between what the Orioles have done cashing those runners from third base and what the Blue Jays have done cashing the runners from third base. And this whole story is like going through the history of baseball and like did teams cash them at a higher rate in previous years and like what type of team is more successful in those situations. You know what the conclusion was? There's like nothing. There's no correlation. It's like almost complete and total randomness, and being good at it, like at the beginning of the season, doesn't mean you're going to be bad at it, or like there's like no correlation. The closest thing they can find is like strikeout percentage, but even that is like a small correlation. The Blue Jays are actually really good at not striking out. I know that that seems like counterintuitive to people that watch this team.
Well, it feels like they always strike out when there's two on and one out.
Well, that is true.
Yeah, that's I was going to say two
they
on,
do have
one
a
out.
High strikeout percentage in those situations, but I'm telling you, despite what
they
you've
save
seen,
their strikeouts, they're like, don't nobody strike out yet. We need ducks on the pond. All there's two guys out. We need to advance the runner to third, or we need to catch the runner for third. Hey, Matt Chapman, or get out there, do your thing. Get out there and get your big strikeout in this spot, buddy. Yeah. It's your moment.
That's it. Like it's there's nothing. Honestly, I know this sucks because you want to attribute some quality to a team that is able to cash, and you want to bemoan some team that isn't. I'm telling you that the numbers suggest that it's just like dumb randomness there's just a bunch of rolls of the dice that are going against the Blue Jays and for the Orioles this year in that respect.
Dude, you're like those people that for 2 years tweeted about Vlad's exit velocity, and you were like, man, it's just bad luck, he's just a BABIP guy. No, it's just all bad. No, that's no, you it's
BABIP
okay you've joined
fine. He's
you've joined
no,
the nerd
BABIP
masses where you can't blend the two things. Like clearly it's a mix of things, and one of them most notably is that their most important hitter, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., is let's go take a look here. He's tied for 11th on the Jays with 0.3 WAR. You know who else also has that, according to Jobo? Is Ernie Clement. Not exactly what you want. He's been, by his standard, because we always have to say that, we have to go by his standard. Yes, like he's better than most baseball players. He's solid.
Paul DeYoung would give up.
He's
would
way
lob 10
better
years
than
off the
Espinal.
End of his life to be Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Yes, no question about it. But by his standard, he has been dreadful, truly dreadful. And you brought up some interesting stats about what he's been doing at the plate. Okay, let's put it this way. You've been basically the guy who has kind of hit the Vlad thing the hardest. You have the hardest exit velocity with Vlad. You were the first person.
People call me the world's biggest Vlad hater on Twitter, which is that's
you
extreme.
Are.
I don't hate Vlad, but I just my expectations were so outsized out of the gates, and you know I've just I expect more out of a once-in-a-generation prospect and a guy who plays a premium position and who did it once in 2021.
Sure. This sure sounds a lot different than the private phone calls we have. But yeah, that's a but yeah, sure. That's your position. You'll stand by it. The conversation that you've been basically trying to drum up and that I think is kind of a fair one at this point is it on the table that you're trading him this offseason? Like, realistically, is this on the table? Obviously, if they make a deep playoff run and he rebounds, it's going to completely go away, right? I think if they win, what would you say, one playoff round and he plays well? Or do you think there's a scenario where he just doesn't play well and he's still on the table regardless?
Yeah, I don't know.
Or should he be? I'm not going to say would he be, because that's like insider stuff. Like, are you trading Vladimir Guerrero Jr. at least at this point? Are you opening him up for trades regardless of what happens the rest of the way here?
I mean, if you win a World Series, like, everything's, you know, you just bring the whole band back, right? Because that lives forever, and
there's nothing that could happen in a World Series, the whole band back, that I'm re-signing Matt Chapman. It's just not happening.
That's rude. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it will be hilarious when the Yankees and they're already like $200 million in payroll committed to next year hand him, a $300 million contract.
Although I will say it was a shocking thing for Espinal to make me miss Matt Chapman.
Yeah, buddy, that's the world we're headed towards, right? Like, not that like every play is an error, but you do, and I do, I'm not to get off topic here because we are talking about Vlad, but like Matt Chapman, I think defensively has regressed even a little bit this year, but he's still so much more than your average third baseman. And the routine plays, by and large, get made every single time it's hit in his direction. And yeah, that's what the Blue Jays, there's just no way they're going to get that type of defense at third base next season.
Sure, to me, that's what the money's for. And it was like the baseline expectation with him. But anyways, like, whatever. I don't want to just, like,
so Vlad,
you're not re-signing Matt Chapman to a big money contract.
No, it's not happening. And again, you can laugh at the Yankees when they do, right?
Yeah, that's fine. Oof, can't wait. Good luck, Yankees. But yes, the option clearly after yesterday cannot be San Diego Espinal. I don't think there's ever been a less popular left side of the infield than Espinal Dion.
Paul DeJong.
Yeah, I think that's as low of approval rating as there's ever been at those two positions in a game in Blue Jays history. Somebody tell me I'm wrong. Get Scott Carson on it. But yeah, there's no freaking way that there's a lower approval rating than those two guys. Anyway, yeah, back to Vladdy. Barring a World Series, then, this is the framework of the question.
Well,
barring a World Series,
let me just put it out here that I do not think there's any scenario in which this front office pulls the trigger on a move like that for the sole reason that it's super risky, right? Like,
I'm not asking you if they will. I'm asking you, should they?
Of course they should. Like, are you nuts? Of course they... Well, especially... I mean, this is... assuming his value is what I think it would be as a 24-year-old who's put forth a runner-up MVP season just 2 years ago and has two more years of team control beyond this one. Like, if that's what I think it is, then the return should be immeasurable. And guess what? Like, it's not a far cry to imagine a scenario where the Blue Jays are able to replicate what they're getting out of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. way cheaper, right? Like, he's arbitration eligible for two more years. Like, by the end of that, he's going to be making almost $30 million. This is like a replacement level player that you're seeing right now. Like, quite frankly, at that position, it's not replacement level as far as offense, right? Overall, he's an above offensive player. He's got an OPS plus of 116, so 16% above league average when it comes to OPS, but not at first base. He's like in the lower half of qualified first basemen. I think last time I checked, among first basemen in WAR, he's like near 20th, right? You can go, Josh Bell is a free agent, and he had a tough start to the season, and then the Marlins acquired him. He's been outstanding. Like, Josh Bell going to cost you $300 million? Probably not. They went out and got Brandon Belt for what, $10 million? Brandon Belt was like retired. Brandon Belt has been far and away a superior player to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And if you can get some sort of insane return on a Vlad trade, like, I just don't know what is the better case to making your team better in the offseason, because the free agent class is garbage. And you can still sign Cody Bellinger, right? Like, that seems like the guy that they targeted this past offseason. Whether they ponied up the same amount the Cubs did, or whether he just decided he wanted to play in Wrigley to try and recoup his value. But he's all the way back to being... I don't know if the MVP form, like, but like pretty damn close. And he's going to be, especially in this class where it's like Shohei, Matt Chapman, and Cody Bellinger, he's going to be at the top of the class. So I don't know. You diversify. You turn one Vlad into multiple quality major league players. And you go out and sign Cody Bellinger. What path to improving the offense is better than that?
It's crazy because Brandon Belt is genuinely unplayable against left-handed pitching. Like, he's only played 18 games against lefties, but in those 18 games, he's OPS less than 600. And sure, he is just, yes, been the far superior offensive player to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. this year.
Yeah, like, it's not close. And I mean, yeah, the eye test would also tell you that. I mean, it's the number one reason I think Vlad hasn't lived up to the potential is, like, just compare the plate appearances between the two. Yeah. Brandon Belt knows what's a strike, or at least is, like, patient enough to take a good, like, get a good strike and walk occasionally, or at least get into a deep count. And, I mean, you referenced the tweet I had and the stats that I dug up about Vlad. If people hadn't seen the tweet, and you should read all my tweets because they're so good, especially the ones about Vlad.
Honestly, the reason it stuck out is because it was the first time I've seen a tweet of yours where I was like, wow, this is a really good one. Although, no, yeah. I'm being serious. Your tweets have been really good on the Jays lately.
Yeah, thank you.
Other stuff? No.
I don't Jay's think I really quality. Tweet about other stuff. Oh, no, yeah. I made a joke about Ben Simmons, how he's in the best shape of his life. And I said, yeah, if he's going to be allowed to dribble two basketballs during a game, he's going to be unstoppable. But, no, he's – so Vlad is swinging more percentage-wise than he ever has before in his entire career. Like, higher swing percentage than ever before. Although he's swinging at fewer meatball pitches, so that's middle pitches, than he ever has before, percentage-wise. And he's getting more meatball pitches in the middle of the zone than he ever has before in his entire career. So again, swinging more, swinging less at meatballs, but getting more meatballs. That's, I mean, that's a guy that has no idea, right? Like, is guessing and is guessing wrong.
You know what, though? This was always this was the first thing that you pointed out about Vladdy, and this is why I'm worried and nervous about, because people will always bring up the age and they'll bring up the MVP season and they'll do all this different stuff. But my biggest concern is that, you know, institutional knowledge of the strike zone was his big thing. His pitch recognition was supposed to be what made him special. He wasn't supposed to be his dad. He was supposed to have power, but he was supposed to be a guy that if you made a mistake, he was going to punish you for it. And he really hasn't been that for years. Like, we have seen that ever since essentially the beginning of Vladdy, which is the strike zone recognition stuff has not always felt great. It's felt like a lot of guessing. And I pointed this out to you the other night. Like, the most frustrating thing to me about Vladdy right now is the first pitch stuff. It seems like he's afraid to fall behind in a count. And so those first pitch outs when they've got runners in scoring position or when they've got runners on is one of the – it's just the most frustrating thing, either the pop-out or the beating it to the shortstop on the first pitch, because he's just guessing and hoping that they're going to try to get one over on him. And I lose my mind.
It's also so stupid because Vlad is actually hitting well over 300 with runners in scoring position. He's actually coming through in clutch situations. But no, the strike zone recognition thing is – it's not like part of – it's everything. It's the whole thing. It's all it is. And – yeah, he's 24. He can improve, and he showed it in 2021 in a weirdo season where, boy, those numbers he accumulated in minor league ballparks, pretty impactful. Guy seems like to really be impacted by his environment because, look at his home road splits this season. I don't know what's happening at Rogers Center. Maybe this is a weird outlier season, but obviously a guy that's very much impacted by the ballpark he plays in. But
no, they changed the ballpark dimensions for Dalton Varsho and not for Vlad.
I mean, he's been obviously even worse, but his OPS at home is, I think he's got an OPS plus of 50. Like, he's like 50% below league average when he bats at home.
Since July 1st, Dalton Varsho's OPS is under 500.
It's not.
Even with those two bombs.
It's not what you want. But no, the Vlad thing, as far as pitch recognition, he's 24. Can he get better? Sure. Like, are there indicators this season that he's doing some things better? The most bizarre of all of them is that the launch angle is way better than ever before. Here's one thing I've never, ever seen somebody do once they've arrived at the major leagues: be better at recognizing strikes. I mean, how often did we talk about Kevin Pillar? Man, if he could just, like, lay off a few more pitches outside of the zone and work some deep, like he's just incapable. And in fact, I talked to him last Friday before the Bautista stuff about how he wishes he had taken some of Bautista's advice when he told him about, you know, trying to be more patient, trying to be more of an on-base guy. And he's like, but I don't think I could have done it because it wasn't part of my skill set. I don't think that is something you can learn. And even at 24, you know, there's lots of meat left on the bone, and he's going to have another 10-plus years in the major leagues. Look at Juan Soto, also 24. Guess what? Like, knows what a strike is.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. You tweeted one the other day that was like, hey, would you do Juan Soto for Vlad? I'm like, yeah, because anybody who doesn't care about the money and the control should be saying yes to that trade. Like, you would genuinely have to be brain dead if it wasn't your money and this was, hey, just a one-for-one. Control is out of the issue. This is just player for player. Clearly, you'd want Juan Soto over Vladimir Guerrero Jr. right now, right? It's just like a...
Yeah.
Obvious thing. So, yeah, it's fine. You kind of tried to make the case for it about the one team getting control and cheaper and blah, 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 blah. But I don't find that to be a realistic trade. I'm saying if we're doing this whole, like, hey, this is the exercise, is do you trade Vlad in the offseason? I think that the point that you made that's the strongest one is how else do you improve this ball club in a material way? And, and like, what are the areas of weakness and how do you improve an area of strength? Like, The premise of this team was supposed to be you have Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He's one of the most special and most talented bats on earth, and he's in the middle of your lineup. And if he's not that, then he's just, you know, a middling first baseman. Like, I kind of think that you have an obligation to say if you don't think that he is the MVP caliber guy anymore, if you think that the overall body of work is actually more indicative of the player that he is, and you can capitalize on his name brand value still being what it is, and the stuff that you outline there, which is, hey, he's 24 and meat on the bone and blah, 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 and control and, you know, still an above average offensive player.
That's not a straw man. Like, I mean, the Blue Jays would probably make that argument to you. No, I'm not saying it is a straw man.
I'm just saying that there's the – at first I thought you can't trade Vladdy because – of the most, you know, obvious argument is, well, his value is lower than it would be. But no, but you're right.
No
way. He's
going to
be encroaching on making the $30 million.
No,
like, all of a sudden, that's done. You know, the idea of the bounce back season when you have to pay $30 million for Vladdy and then he's got a contract extension coming up, nobody's doing that. I actually do. I think I agree with you that if you were going to trade Vladimir Guerrero Jr., literally the only time you could do it outside of a failure next year and they actually do a sell off at the deadline would be this offseason. This is the time where you kind of have to quietly shop it.
Well, and especially if you are in the background talking about a Bo Bichette contract extension that goes beyond the years of control, which you've already locked him up to. And like, materially, the Blue Jays have decided on one guy, like to sign one guy. I understand that Vlad also has the same amount of years of control, but no, they've decided to give one guy cost certainty throughout the years of control, and the other guy, they haven't signed him to. I'm not saying they haven't had contract discussions with Vlad Jr. In fact, I heard some things, maybe they had like some informal discussions about it. But yeah, I think if you are going to go down the road, and I think this is a good idea, of talking contract extension, like long-term with Bo Bichette, I know everybody's a professional, and especially for guys that come from major league lineage, maybe you'd be able to put that aside. These guys are so joined at the hip, at least psychologically in the minds of Blue Jays fans, that I don't know if that's a tenable situation where like Bo Bichette gets the 10-year extension and there's Vlad Jr. still going to arbitration for the last 2 years of his deal. Like, I do think that there would have to be a separation of the two at that point. I don't think it's a tenable situation to give one guy an extension and one guy not and have them on the same team.
I like how you're basically making the case of, if you're going to keep them together, they have to have the Leafs situation where you pay them both, you know, big money at the same time, and you give them their soothers, and you say, hey, don't worry, everybody's the same, everybody's equal, everybody gets treated the exact same. You all get the most money, you all get the most treatment, and you don't
but
get
any criticism. But guess what? It's worked with Bo. Like, I put it at like a non-zero percentage chance that he's looked so good this year because he's not worrying about at least his short-term future with the Blue Jays.
Buddy, I think that there's absolutely something to that, but I will tell you, and I think especially with Vladdy, who, he's clearly a happy-go-lucky guy, but I think that from seeing a bunch of his slumps now, he's clearly someone that wears a lot of pressure on his shoulders and, you know, can be impacted a bit by the moment. And I have to think that this is a guy who thought that he was going to be getting one of those Juan Soto deals and all that money. And now that he's struggling, there's no way that he could completely remove himself from the thought that with every passing day where he goes 0 for 4 or 1 for 4 with a ground ball single with two outs, that he's going to be able to make that contract. But okay, this we kind of touched on the question I asked you and I was begging you to shut up about on the phone. And then we'll take a quick break. But is the benefit of the Vladdy season that the Jays can really shift their focus to re-signing Bo Bichette to a long-term deal? That, like, this is no longer a debate, because it used to be. It used to be, which one do you re-sign? And in fact, it was always, well, it can't be Bo because he's always going to want to play shortstop and you can't have that there and blah, 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 hits for average, doesn't walk. And now it's like painfully clear of which guy you think is going to be able to sustain who he is, because he's the guy with the actual real consistency throughout his career, even though it was like he's consistently inconsistent. Do you think that this is an actual byproduct of the Vlad struggle? Like, they have to just say, we're paying Bo, and we're trying to get this thing done ASAP, because you can't lose both.
I mean, there's really no debate. And you want to talk about, like, outlier seasons and consistency and, oh, okay, well, Vlad showed it in 2021, the what he can be, except, you know, the other four seasons are, like, remarkably similar. Like, what is he? Is he the guy that he's been most of the time, or the guy that he was for 1 year? Bo Bichette has been this every single year of his major league career. This is, like, you got a couple of months out of Bo Bichette where he was hitting seventh in the lineup and looked like, boy, something was wrong, but then recovered so insanely well the last 5 weeks of the season that his numbers were, like, going into this season, which he's now put up a career-high OPS plus of 134. Last year's OPS plus of 128 was his career high. Like, this is what he's been his entire career. Of course, like, if you're making a wager on one of the guys... Actually, I mean, yeah, you pretty much know what you're getting out of Vlad as well. But again, talking about the positional bar offensively at that position, and considering the bar offensively at Bo Bichette's position, who he's now proved, like, he's not exactly the world's greatest defender at shortstop, but I think we can all agree he's a very passable defender at that position. I mean, it wouldn't be any debate for me who I'd be pushing my $300 million or $300+ million towards, and it's the guy who plays shortstop and is a lock to be the American League leader in hits, who he still is despite being on the IL for 10 days.
I would say that there's a couple of things here, the cautionary stuff. One is, a year ago with Bo, when he was struggling and he was having such a bad season, there were a lot of reactionary takes. And I wonder if it could be a similar story arc for Vlad Jr., where maybe he gets hot right now and he makes everybody look foolish.
Absolutely could, but it's not too late.
That's the thing.
That's the lesson. It's not too late.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Two is that the difference between paying the two of them, to me, and maybe I'm completely off with this because I'm not like David Sampson or John Morosi, but you would have to think that coming off of this season in particular, if you were talking about extensions, that this, again, if you're not going to trade Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you're not going to be open to trade ideas this offseason, you have to be open to entertaining contract extension talks with him, because now you're trying to buy low, right? You're not letting him go into the $30 million season and then being like, ooh, wow, is he going to stay? Is he going to go? Are we up against the... That's too difficult a position. So could you get Vladdy on some kind of a team-friendlier deal, considering that he does want to be a Toronto Blue Jay? He's indicated that he wants a contract. He's coming off of a down season. Like, maybe he's not willing to bet on himself after another down year. I don't know. Versus Bo, who... What does it look like if you're sitting down with a guy who already has a ton of cost certainty for the next couple of years, who is the son of a major leaguer, who loves betting on himself, and who clearly wants all the money? Are you giving him a record-setting contract? Because just, again, the optics of the two of them, one would indicate that the price of the brick is going up for Bo Bichette.
Yeah. No, honestly, if I was going to if I was going to bet on which guy would be harder to negotiate with, I would say Bo Bichette, despite the fact that he is the only guy that signed a multi-year deal with the Blue Jays. It does. And, you know, Vlad hasn't said, I'm desperate to be a Blue Jay for my career, but, like, he's given indications to that effect, right? Like, he's at least been vocal talking about it. Bo's never said anything like that. Like, Bo's Mr. Play It Close to the Vest, Mr. Super.
I was going to say, Bo's most biggest quote was actually with you and I, where he was like, yeah, I want to play shortstop, and no one else should come in here and take it from me. We went, all right.
I mean, paraphrasing, but yeah. Yeah.
No, but yeah, paraphrasing for sure. Yeah, I think people can glean that. But that's it. That's all. Okay, so yeah, the question is, yeah, should the Blue Jays shop Vladimir Guerrero Jr. this offseason? Something that I really never thought would be a question, even though, the last year I at least had my suspicions about, hey, what is he going to be offensively? Will he ever be a super-duper star again? I never thought that he was going to have an offensive season that was quite like this, and I certainly didn't think that we would be posing this. But yeah, a lot of time to maneuver for him. Okay, a couple of quick things, rapid fire, including, yeah, do you think that you could be Danny Jansen and take 5 pitches to your body in 7 games? Quick break. We'll be back with Good Hour.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
You know Craig Biggio was hit by 285 pitches in his career?
Yeah, all-time major league leader, right?
Nope, number 2. He's just the only guy I know. I don't know who Huey Jennings is.
Yeah,
he's,
I think
287 for Huey.
Yeah, but that guy sounds like he played in 1880. That's not modern baseball.
Yeah.
Huey Jennings.
Huey Jennings.
Don't count, Huey.
Buddy, Huey Jennings didn't wear all those baseballs to have you go like, well, that wasn't modern baseball, you know?
Way to go, Huey Jennings, in 1892, having an OPS of 546.
Sure.
Well done. Well done, Huey. Hit a couple of home runs when they were like, there were no fences in those ballparks, so he just kept running as the ball rolled out past all the outfielders.
Dude, I love that he had an OPS of 587, so it's like getting hit by the pitch was truly his signature play. Like, he'd go up bat, and they would just be like, all right, Huey, take that pitch, wear it. And he'd lean in, you know, he'd stick his elbow out there. He would wear it. That guy was a soldier. He was a warrior.
This is – okay, so I'm looking at his years. Like, the league leader in hit by pitches 5 consecutive years, 27, 32, 51. He was hit by 51 pitches in 1896.
Yeah. Dude, you would think that the umpires would – have said something to old Huey. They would have gone, all right, enough of these shenanigans, Huey. We know that you're trying to get hit. Or imagine it's actually, this is the ideal scenario. The ideal scenario is that Huey was a trash talker, and that's he actually got pitchers to throw at him. That was his strategy before every game, was to just talk about the opposing pitcher's wife and then go stand out there and then wear a couple of pitches for his team. I like that idea. I like that scenario. Oh, so way to go,
100%. Huey. 100%. Yeah. Huey, man, what an 1895 season. 32 hit by pitches and 28 sacrifice bunts. This guy was like, so many baseball fans that would be like, that's my guy, Huey Jennings. Sack bunts and getting hit by pitches. Leaning into one, wearing one, and then moving the runner over.
Huey Jennings, also his baseball reference page, has my favorite type of like old-timey baseball cap, you know? Like, that's the top one, where it's
Buddy.
Like, is that even a baseball cap?
Yeah, where, like, that's the brim guy, is barely, you know, like, past your nose. And, like,
yeah.
Well, also, his nickname was E-Ya.
Was old gets hit by pitch?
E-Ya. Like, E-E-Y-A-H.
You know what that was?
I have no idea. That was the noise he made when he got hit by a pitch.
E-Ya! E-Ya! They all shouted it from the dugout as Huey was getting pegged by those pitches. Okay, so I guess Danny Jansen would be on pace to break his record, though. If it was if every 7 games he took 5 pitches, he'd be right there.
Mm-hmm.
How much would you have to get paid to do that, to take the 5 pitches that Danny Jansen, in 7 days, too? Like, because I think that if you spread it out over the course of a major league season, it would be easier. But I feel as though getting hit that many times in a week, it would take a different kind of psychological toll on you, know? Like, every loud noise
coming,
you hear, you know, you start to flinch.
That's the thing. I guess after, like, the third one, you would feel like every pitch was going to hit you. But, yeah, if you knew it was coming, that would be the worst. Like, getting hit by a 100-mile-an-hour fastball is horrible, horrible, horrible. It's hard to imagine anything worse in all the pro sports. But knowing that you're going to get hit by a 100-mile-an-hour fastball is, I think, maybe the – I can't think of – a fate worse than that. But yeah, how much would I have to get paid? Buddy, you don't want to know how low I'd go to get
hit by pitches. Yeah, that's true. I forgot. I forget sometimes how cheap
about?
You are. Yeah, I forget that you're the guy who like took his wife on a first date to Schindler's List because it was like a cheap movie night. It was like that's how you determined to go to that. So anyway, am I a bad person for kind of rooting for him to get hit by pitches right now, even though he's sitting games out using the off day? Because it's now become kind of enjoyable to me to hear the broadcast reaction to hit. And I'm sitting there now watching his at-bats going, are they going to hit him? Just because it is such an interesting streak, I'm like, is he going to get the most hit by pitches in a short span for the Blue Jays? Like, am I a bad person for rooting for Danny Jansen to get hit by baseballs?
No. I think you're a normal person because I'm kind of doing the same thing, okay, right? Yeah. Like, who doesn't want to see this weirdness continue? And like, there's some – so Craig Biggio, it made sense. Like, he hung out over the plate. Like, and I guess Danny Jansen does to a degree, but not – like, it's not obvious that he's, you know, taking up a bunch of space. And it's not like he hangs in there longer than other people. So I don't know. It just feels like a total anomaly. And like, he's already doubled his career high in hit by pitches in a season. It was 4, which he did twice in his first 2 seasons in the major leagues in 18 and 19. And now he already has 8 this season. So yeah, that's super weird. And I love when weird things happen for apparently no reason. Of course I'm rooting for this to continue. Also, because it's like, it's one of the ways the Blue Jays can create offense. Because God knows they can't hit their way on base.
Well, they won a game thanks to hit by pitch.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they lost a game by just, oof. Yeah, they gave that one away last night. That was there. That was like,
yeah. I mean, there were more runs scored after the Espinal error, the bullpen deployment, the sliding doors situation.
It's a big sliding doors situation.
And also, it must be said that it was a catchable ball for Vlad on the other end, right? Like, it wasn't easy. It was a short hop, and you know, we are talking about the reigning Gold Glove winner at first base in the American League. So
I haven't heard one person. He's made a couple of good defensive plays this year, Vladdy. No question about it. Anyway, I don't want to make this the rag on Vlad hour, but yeah,
why?
Certainly it's why.
No, the defensive numbers are atrocious for him this year.
Yeah, yeah,
they're awful, awful, awful.
Okay, so I mentioned it. You're leaving for a week, and so I wanted to close on this. What's the most interesting stretch run story to you? What's the thing in this wild card chase that is going to capture your attention the most, or that you're most curious about?
Well, I mean, there's a multitude of different things. Well, the thing I was thinking about yesterday is Matt Brash came out there and like just barely held on for a win against a Royals team that gave the Mariners a bunch of trouble. Was how is this team that is now what, a game back of the Blue Jays for the final wild card spot? Like, already blew a save in the 9th inning, like, notably, traded away their closer. Like, how much regret is this team going to have for selling? And I get it. Like, they made the playoffs for the first time. They broke the streak last season. They traded away their closer. And Matt Brash throws 100. He's got gas, no doubt, but he's not Paul Sewald. And he hasn't been Paul Sewald and gave up a leadoff home run against the Royals yesterday. I mean, if you're talking about the teams on the outside looking in, because that's the only team, right? Like, the Yankees are home and cooled out. They are done, pretty obviously. Red Sox are—I know they're mathematically still alive, but they're done. I thought they were kind of done when Alex Verdugo showed up 30 seconds before the start of that Blue Jays game, and Alex Cora sat him down for the game. And the other one will be, like, down the stretch here, and this is something I brought up with a couple of guests yesterday on my show, that for the second straight year that we've had this 3 wild card thing, the 3rd wild card spot appears to be the best place to be because you get the American League Central winner, right? Like, you're going to get the Twins in that wild card round and avoid either the Rays or the Astros or maybe the Rangers if the Astros catch the Rangers. And then, yeah, you're going to get to avoid that bracket in the DS as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know why we don't make the simple switch of, okay, yeah, you get a playoff spot if you win the American League Central, because if we're going to still have some amount of unbalanced schedule, and the closer we get to balance, it'll still be, you're going to play your divisional opponents more, 13 times instead of 19 times. But okay, you can have a playoff spot, but why do you get seeded number 1 among the wildcard teams? Why aren't you the 4th seed That seems like an easy fix. But right now, the way it exists, there's way more impetus. And especially considering, like, we just talked about the home road splits for the Blue Jays and talked about the Blue Jays losing both home games to the Mariners in the wild card round. That's, sorry, not an incentive to finish higher up the pecking order in the wild card standings. You want to finish third.
Yeah, dude, I know that story is going to start to get reactivated here. Probably, I'd say closer to another month from now, right? This is like playoff roster talk. I was actually going to joke with you that playoff roster talk is right around the corner because once these reinforcements come, I think the portrayal of it is going to be, here's your playoff roster, right? Mm-hmm. Like you've got it set now. That it's hard to envision a scenario where anything changes with the 25-man roster other than it being the guys that you're seeing right now. But in regards to the, playing the central thing, you're right. People are going to start talking about that. They're going to start spinning that for the Jays, and I think it's going to be something you want. The benefit I think that they have is even with this soft spot coming up in the schedule, it's still hard for me to see them jumping over Houston or Tampa Bay.
And it is a soft spot, right? Like they do have a bunch of lesser light teams. They have a bunch of last place teams coming up. And, you know, I include the Yankees in there because the Yankees are – not just a last place team in name only. Like they're playing like a last place team.
They've lost five in a row in two of their last eight. They're packed up. They're done.
I don't think they've scored a run in 19 innings. Like it's abysmal. I will say that we've already seen Cleveland who can pitch the ball. They're not a last place team and they're not in there. The Rockies stink and the A's stink. The Royals and the Nationals are kind of giving people trouble right now. The Nats beat the Red Sox yesterday. Nats over their last 20 are like over 500. Royals, same thing. Like they're kind of getting off the mat. So Rockies, A's are as bad as they've ever been. I would caution people before they start saying that those are like you got to sweep those series against the Nats and the Royals, because the Nats specifically have looked like they've got a little bit more life recently. And if you watched it all, this crazy series between the Royals and the Mariners, like that could be a test as well.
Yeah, sure. They should still be beating the brakes off of those teams at this point
sure
of the
should.
Year, especially given that, you know, that's the opportunity for them. For me, the stretch run question is exactly what I talked about a little bit off the top, which is just, and it's yesterday's topic too, but it's, can you say Kikuchi finish the season this way? Like, can he actually close it out? Because it's not inconceivable now. Like, he's dropped underneath Berríos for ERA on the season. And, I don't think that it's inconceivable that his numbers end up being pretty damn near close to what Kevin Gausman's are. And if you look at, like, win-loss percentage of this team, he's got the number one win percentage of the Toronto Blue Jays. And I know that people, like, don't really like those stats. But, what happens if... I've said there's never been a redemption story like this that I can ever remember. I equated it to what happened. What if David Clarkson would have come back in year two and had, 88 points, 90 points. I want to see if he can keep doing this. It's aesthetically pleasing. It doesn't look like it's going anywhere. He has all the stuff. It doesn't seem fluky at all. No. If Yusei closes out the year this way, I feel like it's one of my favorite stories in the last, my entire life as a Toronto sports fan.
Comeback player of the year? Comeback player of the year is the dumbest thing ever because, do you give it to the injured guy? I don't know no injured guy comes to mind. It doesn't always have to be an injured guy. I mean, why can't it be Yusei Kikuchi bumped out of the rotation last year and major league leader in ERA since the All-Star break? Comeback player of the year.
Hopefully he gives a speech to Manoah after the end of the year. Like, you can be me. Benny, enjoy your vacation. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave five stars. And then, probably hit us up about what you think the most interesting wildcard stretch questions are. Anyways, I'm off tomorrow too, so I will see you next Monday. Ray Magliotti.